This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County in Bloomington Normal, 97.1 in Lincoln, 88.3 in Pontiac, covering much of central Illinois. It's our 10th anniversary that is going on right now, so if you are able to make a donation, we would really appreciate it. We've been here now for 10 years, thanks to you, and as you know, we're brought to you by you, and we can't survive without your donation, so anything you can give is very much appreciated. You can make a donation at our website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. You can call our station at 309-807-2427. That's 309-807-2427. But we depend on you, and we're having a wonderful 10th anniversary. We're still here. We've improved, and we're getting better and better. And it's all account of you. So we're very, very grateful to the people out there who have supported us and continue to support us. If you want more information about us, please go to that website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com. You'll learn a lot about us, and you'll be able to help out bringing Catholic news and a lot of Catholic theological information and information about the Catholic Church to right here in central Illinois. We're going to have a great show for you today. I'm here with my wife, Lynn, and we're going to talk today about what happened at the Save America rally. I know that maybe seems a little bit distant from things Catholic, but the modern world is built on the foundation of the Catholic Church that built Western civilization. And what's going on in the modern world is a lot of times pertinent and important to what's also happening in the Catholic Church. So we're going to talk about it, and we're going to tie it to the Catholic Church, as you'll see. But before we start, I want to ask my wife, Lynn, is there anything you want to do, Lynn, before we start?
Yes. I want to say good morning. Good morning to all the Catholics listening and everybody else, too. Glad to have you. It's a beautiful day out. Feels like spring. It really does. But I haven't seen my crocuses come up yet. I can't figure out what's going on with them. I don't know. The robins aren't back yet either.
No,
at least I haven't seen them.
No, I haven't seen any either. Usually, a lot of times we see some right in January. I think we did last winter, but haven't seen any this year.
You know, it just occurred to me, too, when we walked in. If you want to find Spirit Catholic Radio, our studio that we're broadcasting from is now downstairs. And to find us, we have an office and everything, and it's on the north side of the same building we were in. If you never had need to come or to call or any, but to come, it would be on the north side of the building. There's a door there, and it has a big sign, Spirit Radio, Spirit Catholic Radio. So I don't know if anybody's mentioned that, that's where you would find Spirit Catholic Radio, is on the north side, ground level, on the north side. Okay.
At any rate, as we mentioned.
I'm not finished yet.
Okay.
Excuse me, but on our way in, I just happened to catch a glimpse of the office. It's really looking good, better all the time. And it occurred to me, Mother Angelica, she loved yellow roses. And I thought for our anniversary, I'm going to have to get out and get some silk yellow roses, and we'll put them up by her picture. Just a thought. And I thought if I put it on here, maybe I'll remember. But, so, go ahead, Bob.
Okay.
I was jumping up and down over there.
No, I was just going to say, I was going to agree with you. At any rate, you know, we do have the new studio. We mentioned it last week, and it's really nice to be here. It's so spacious. There's so much room. We're not crammed in between the desk and the wall. We have plenty of space behind us. We have brand new stools to sit on. And it's just nice, spacious, a lot of desk room, new controls, everything. It's really great. So we're moving along well. And I just want to remind the people out there, it's you who are doing all of this for us. So we really appreciate it.
It really is great. It really is. Thank you.
But at any rate, before we start on this, what really happened at the Save America rally, the article that I'm going to read from and use to talk about this appears in Chronicles magazine, a magazine of culture. And Chronicles was put out originally by the Rockford Institute to sort of recapture the traditional American culture. And the Rockford Institute was primarily a Catholic organization. The name has been changed to the Charlemagne Institute. And again, most of the people there are Catholic. It's not a particularly Catholic magazine. Of course, it's an eclectic magazine. It has articles all about America and tradition. It is a conservative magazine. It talks about the old right and the conservatism, you know, in a real sense of conservatism, not any particular political party ideological magazine at this time. But nevertheless, I thought I'd talk a little bit about Charlemagne before we start. Why did they name themselves the Charlemagne Institute, and who is Charlemagne? And so I'll mention a few things about that before we start, because that sort of ties the magazine to Catholicism and helps tie the article that we're talking about to Catholicism as well. So who is Charlemagne? Charlemagne is one of the greatest persons, a Carolingian king in what was Middle Ages France, who actually set, probably more than any other person, the course of the Catholic Church and the course of Western civilization in the 8th century. There were about three factors making up Europe. That is Christendom, because Europe grew out of Christendom. And that was the Catholic Church, the Universal Church, or Catholic Church, which means Universal Church, that was based in Rome. It was also the Roman tradition of liberty under law. For the Romans, at least, there was a lot of liberty under law. Romans had, especially in the early part of the Roman Empire, the Republic of Rome had a very strong law that allowed for a lot of liberty for its citizens before it grew corrupt as time went on. And then there was the third element, was the Germanic ideal of liberty under warrior kings. And Charlemagne was one of those warrior kings. In the 8th century, there appeared Charles Martel, Charles the Hammer, and he halted the Moors in 732 to the south of what is now France. And his son was Pepin III. And then Pepin's son became the greatest of all Western kings for a long, long time. And his name was Charlemagne. And he had the greatest army since Rome. His sword was dedicated to the church. And he fought 50 campaigns all over Western Europe to protect Western civilization and the church. He was very, very in favor of the church and very, very pious and religious. He converted a lot of heathen, and he defended the church. When I say pious and religious, that didn't mean that he was some kind of a saintly type man. He was a very, very worldly man, actually. He was illiterate, but he was very, very well educated. He spoke about three languages, and he kept himself up by having people report to him on everything that was going on all over his kingdom, which ran all the way from Germany in the north, protecting against the Vikings, and all the way to Spain in the south, protecting against the Muslims, all the way to the Hungarian type of peoples, the Slavs and so forth in the east, protecting a lot of them against a lot of the barbarian tribes there, and then all the way west to the British Isles. And he was Charlemagne, the person that actually founded, was one of the foundations along with the church of Western civilization. So it's very important. He was a very dedicated Catholic also. So it's the book, the magazine is dedicated to him. And so I just wanted to give a little bit of overview of who he was and what he did and why he's so important and why a Catholic organization named themselves the Charlemagne Institute. So maybe that helps out a little bit. Is there anything you want to comment on that, Lynn, before we go on?
No, that's a pretty good coverage of Charlemagne.
Okay. But at any rate, in Chronicles, a magazine of culture, and people might want to get it sometime, in the February 2021 issue, there is an article entitled What Really Happened at the Save America Rally. And I don't think, you know, that's really being addressed. We don't know what really happened. And so this article here is a good start at perhaps having an investigation to find out what really happened there. And the article is written by Douglas Burton, who is an independent writer living near Washington, D.C. He is a former opinion editor for the Washington Times publication, which was a conservative publication, and I think it still is, and was a volunteer in Donald Trump's reelection campaign in Pennsylvania. So he may be somewhat biased, you know, toward the Trump side of the issue. But it seems in this article he tries to do a good job of asking questions and getting information on both sides of the issue. And we certainly need more of this, and this is a start. So I think our listeners, our Catholic listeners, need to know what's going on, because we are, you know, all of this is part of our Western civilization. It is not standing still. We don't live in some kind of a bubble where history has suddenly stopped and we're protected from the changes that are going on. There is a movement away from the foundations of Western civilization and an attack on Western civilization. And that means that's an attack is also on the church. So finding out what's going on and understanding it is very, very important, especially to Catholics, because we are the people, and our history is such that the people that built the foundation of Western civilization, everything that you see around you, was based on what was done after the fall of Rome by the Catholic Church. So it's important to know what is going on and happening with the progress of that institution. So I'll start with the article here. What really happened on January 6, 2021? The nation still doesn't know the whole of it, but by all accounts on the left and from center-right Fox News, it was America's darkest moment since 9/11, Donald Trump's Waterloo, and the abyss of the right. As a participant at the Save America rally, my own perceptions were rather different. As a result of the events on January 6 and its aftermath, the mainstream media have badly overplayed their hand. And I agree with that. I think most of us can see, don't you think so, Lynn, that it's a little bit overmuch to have sent 25,000 troops and razor wire to guard the Capitol, and then to expect that there was going to be some kind of huge attack on the Capitol here on March 4th, I think it was on, you know, Inauguration Day attack or something. Some kind of a plot was supposed to happen.
Oh, overkill. You'd send that many troops to fight a war, and they're still there. Exactly. The barbed wire is still there. They, you know, and from what I saw in some news reports, the troops are National Guard. They're getting rotten fruit and everything, you know, to eat. It's just insane.
I know. So we have to, you know, examine this. Exactly what to understand this reaction to what happened there, we as Americans need to know what was it that actually happened there. I mean, it seems to me that there's this huge reaction, and we're being told that there was an extreme event there. So let's look into that. Yeah. And so this is a start. It says, it goes on to say, we can now begin to see without illusions that the managerial and media elites are waging scorched earth class warfare against the populist right. And so this person identifies this as class warfare, and I talked about that before. It seems as if there's the sort of elite managerial people who are somehow or another attacking and disparaging the ordinary working citizens. And this seems to be an issue running through our culture right now, and we need to address it and understand it. It says, in recognition of that reality lies the hope of rebirth. Now, I'm wondering here exactly as we go along, what does Burton mean by rebirth? Is he talking about a rebirth of our culture, a restoration of what we used to be more than what's happening and going on now? Is there anything you want to comment on that, Lynn?
He's talking about rebirth, like he wants to bring some, the birth of something that was before. That may be a fairy tale. I don't know, because I don't understand yet what he's trying to say.
At any rate, he's going on to say, in recognition, at any rate, of what actually is happening there, maybe we have some hope of a rebirth, that it may be a rebirth of conservatism. The man is on the right, a conservative, or a rebirth of a more sane republic. I don't know exactly, but the point is that he seems to be looking at this as if it could be a situation for optimism for the future. But he goes on. He says, how did it all start? The answer is still a matter of investigation. But we're not getting a lot of answers from that investigation. It seems to me that we should have far more investigative reporters and investigative news people out doing these things. And that's another thing I think that we might want to comment on. What has happened to really good investigative reporting? It doesn't seem we're getting it anymore. It seems people are simply taking ideological sides, and instead of reporting, we have sort of an advocacy of one side or the other without actually trying to find out what the real facts are. We have mostly opinion news anymore, and we're not getting the old-fashioned investigative, hard, factual-looking reporters that used to go out and look for the real story in things. What do you think on that, Lynn?
Yeah. I don't know. He seems to have really high hopes that maybe we can restore things. I don't know that we have enough time.
Well,
prayerfully, we do. I don't think we've been told everything that's been going on. I don't know that we ever will.
No, we haven't. But that's the whole point here. It's still a matter of investigation, and we certainly need a lot more factual investigation into this affair.
Yeah, it seems to me that they get together in the newsrooms or wherever, and they get their marching orders for the day. This is what we want, and then that's what we get.
At any rate, we're going to have to stop here and take a break. So we'll continue with the article after we come back. It's very, very interesting. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Please excuse us as we interrupt this program briefly to bring you an important message.
Hi, I'm John Hall. I'm the founder and president of Catholic Spirit Radio. In March, this station celebrates its 10th anniversary. On March 9th, 2011, we began broadcasting at 89.5 FM from an abandoned telephone relay tower near Saybrook, Illinois. Since that time, we have moved on from one used transmitter to four new transmitters, from broadcasting in one county to three, from no listeners to thousands. We are a growing Catholic radio network broadcasting the EWTN Global Catholic Signal in McLean, Livingston, and Logan counties. Catholic Spirit Radio's goal is to catechize Catholics and evangelize Christians of other denominations, the unchurched, and those of other faith traditions, as well as non-believers. We rely on Holy Scripture, sacred tradition, and the Magisterium of the Catholic Church as the pillar and bulwark of the truth. Our mission is to deepen the knowledge of Catholics and to share the true faith with non-Catholics. In pursuit of this mission, we provide light to those in darkness and certainty to those in doubt. We give inspiration to the hopeless and companionship to the lonely. We build up the faith of those in our parishes and communities. Everything that a small circle of volunteers and I have done over the past 10 years, we have done in your name. We could not have done it without your prayer and financial support. That's why I'm commenting today. I want to say thank you. Friends, it's hard to find the right words to express my gratitude, but rest assured, you have my heartfelt thanks, and more importantly, you will have the eternal gratitude of those souls who you've helped save.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic. We're back from our break. We're talking about what really happened at the Save America rally from an article in Chronicles Magazine and by Douglas Burton. And we're trying to, Douglas was there at the rally, and he's talking about what he saw and about the fact that there should be an investigation, and also the fact that we simply so far haven't really been getting enough really hard factual information about what actually went on there. Instead, we seem to be getting a lot of propaganda on one side or the other about actually what happened there instead of getting the real story. So let's go on with the article and see if we can begin at least a start of finding out what was going on there.
Yeah, I think that'd be good. Get it all pieced together.
And he goes, how did it all start? The answer is still is a matter of investigation, but it's clear that confusion reigned at the Capitol even before President Trump's speech at the Ellipse ended. Timelines from the Washington Post and the Epoch Times agree that the breach on the northwest side of the Capitol began 20 to 30 minutes before President Trump's speech ended, belying the idea that Trump himself ordered the siege. And the reference here to the Washington Post and the Epoch Times, Burton is showing here that there was agreement on both sides of the political spectrum. The Washington Post, of course, is a liberal newspaper, and the Epoch Times is a conservative newspaper. And so, but both of them agree that the breach started 20 or 30 minutes before Trump's speech even ended, so it could hardly be that Trump himself ordered it. And then they go on, and he says, multiple authorities agree, and he's referring back to the newspapers, multiple authorities meaning one on each side in this case, and others as well, that Trump's speech contained no such incitement. If we go back and listen to Trump's speech, he did not incite anybody to any riot. He incited people, if anything, to go out and peacefully protest that the election had a lot of very, very confusing incidents that happened, and that there was room for a lot of illegal things going on and fraud. That's what Trump wanted the protest to show. But evidence continues to mount that bad actors planned the breach weeks in advance, and that the FBI had advance warning at least 2 days beforehand. And what he means by bad actors here, I'm not sure completely, but he's saying that there were people who wanted to see this rally turn into something bad so that they could use it for propaganda purposes. He says, before the breach, 800,000 true believers in Trump's stolen election had peacefully assembled for 5 hours prior, just as they had gathered for marches on November 14th and December 12th in the same city. And I think what he's trying to establish here is that there were two marches before this, and those marches were peaceful. So why should this march be any different? And then he also establishes here that the protesters had been in place for 5 hours before anything happened. Now, if there was some kind of plot and plan to cause something to happen, why would all of these people be in place for 5 hours before doing anything? I think maybe here he's trying to establish that there was no trouble in that 5 hours, and there was no trouble in the two marches before that. You wanted to say something, Lynn?
I was just going to say, how could you keep that big crowd that big under, you know, keep them happy and organized if you had something planned ahead of time and they knew it?
Yeah, that does seem. It needs to be investigated. We need to, you know, understand why was this. We need good reporting to get in there and find all these facts out. We have so much ways to get information nowadays. There must be lots and lots of people who took pictures. I mean, everybody has a cell phone, and they all take pictures with them. There must be a huge composite that we could assess and look at and find out what was really going on there. And we need that investigation. People need to know what the actual truth is, not some kind of propaganda from one side or the other. it says that all sides agree that the Capitol Police were undermanned and unprepared for the waves of protesters pushing against the temporary barriers. What the organizers of the Save America rally had planned for that afternoon remains a mystery. So no one really knows if the organizers of it had planned anything other than, you know, what was going on. Most people, it seems, were, from the evidence here, were simply waiting around, wondering, you know, if anything was planned or what was going to happen.
And, well, I think they were waiting around to see the former president.
I think so also.
He draws a huge, huge crowd.
At any rate, Trump said, "I'll be with you," to his audience at the Ellipse. But there was no podium or stage set at the Capitol, and he was a no-show. So if they were waiting for Trump, either he canceled or he didn't plan to go in the first place. So he never did show up, and there wasn't anything set up for him. The other thing that seems to be questionable here, if you look at it from his reporting, is that why weren't the Capitol Police more informed than they were? I mean, certainly there must have been information of how many people might show up at this rally or suspicion of that sort. So it seems, you know, there needs to be an explanation of why it wasn't the case that the police were, didn't plan for more protesters being there. It goes on. It says, at one point in the early afternoon, InfoWars broadcaster Alex Jones, and InfoWars is an organization, I guess a news organization that is sort of very, might be a little bit on the far right. Alex Jones, I think, is a person accused by the left of engaging in a lot of conspiracy theories and so forth. But again, you have one side sort of making accusations against the other side. We need an investigation here to find out just exactly how much information some of these people were giving that was factual and how much information was maybe biased to one side or the other. At any rate, it says, Alex Jones urged the crowd to move to the east side of the Capitol where speakers would address them. But by that time, the situation was out of control. Hundreds of thousands waiting outside the Capitol on the parking lots and in the mall area had no clue what was happening inside the rotunda. Did President Trump? Now, we don't know if President Trump knew what was going on inside the rotunda or not. We need to know this information. It says, after 3 hours of chaos, the president posted a belated video urging his supporters to, quote, "go home, go home, go in peace." For many, that was too little, too late. I mean, people had been there for a long time already before this happened. And did Trump know if there was, you know, something bad starting or what? We really don't know this. In the stated view of the left and its Democratic chieftains in Congress, Trump had egged on his followers for weeks with the false hope that the election could be reversed. That's the story of the left. But is it true? And how much do we know about that? Trump was urging Vice President Mike Pence to reject the electors from the battleground states. When Pence failed to act on those expectations, some Trump followers lost it. Among them was an irate Texas woman, Jenny Cudd from Midland, who, according to Newsweek, posted a Facebook video of herself at the Capitol telling her followers this. She said, "I want to let you know what actually happened today. When Pence betrayed us is when we decided to storm the Capitol. We didn't vandalize anything, but we did break down Nancy Pelosi's office door, and somebody stole her gavel and took a picture in the chair flipping off the camera." So somebody was, you know, sitting in the chair and then flipping off, you know, their finger to the camera, so that you know, sort of making disparagement of Nancy Pelosi. And then she goes on, "This is the most significant breach of an American institution." No, I'm sorry. This is the end of her quote. And then another person makes a comment and says, "This is the most significant breach of an American government institution since the British burned the Capitol after the Battle of Bladensburg on August 24, 1814, tweeted Fox's congressional reporter Chad Pergram, even as flag-waving ruffians rummaged through the Capitol office at 3 p.m. Well, I hardly think that, you know, it is an equivalent of what the British did in 1814. That was during the War of 1812, and the British came in and they burned the Capitol down. They burned Washington down in 1814, and they were armed soldiers, you know, fighting a war. So it was not, this incident wasn't the same, and it seems the reporter was being, you know, over-exaggerating things at that point. So it goes on here. It says, the Save America rally had begun near dawn at the Ellipse behind the White House, where tens of thousands were waiting in line on a cold, overcast day. They were people who had faith that somehow January 6th would become a, quote, Red Sea moment that would deliver an improbable victory from apparent defeat. And I think a lot of these people did believe that, but it was not likely that something like that was going to happen. It wasn't long before the air was filled with clouds of pot smoke and incongruously fundamentalist preaching, while a sound system blared out rock classes such as Freddie Mercury's Bohemian Rhapsody. So it was, you know, a sort of a strange picture going on here. But it was a lot like what leftist rallies used to be like many years ago. You know, back in the 60s, the radicals, the radical left and so forth back at that time made protests just like this, and there was a lot of pot smoking going on and everything else. And these people were sort of doing the same thing. What was new back in the 60s has sort of become old hat today. So these people weren't doing anything that was a lot different than what has been going on for a long time. So it doesn't seem like that is something nowadays that, you know, is that radical. It goes on here. It says, nearby on 14th Street, hundreds of Chinese Americans were holding a Christian revival and serving communion wine. I think what Burton is trying to establish here is that this was sort of a surreal scene. I mean, you had people, you had fundamentalist Christians holding rallies. You had rock band playing. You had people smoking pot. It doesn't seem like this was some kind of an organized rally to attack the Capitol if all of these things were going on. Most of the people certainly did not seem to be there for that reason. And I think that's what Burton is trying to establish by simply reporting these facts. It says, all were aware that the Georgia Senate runoff had been called for the opposing team. In other words, the liberal side won the Georgia Senate race. And so, you know, had been called for the other side. But it says people were friendly and polite while bumping shoulders, but the mood was subdued. In other words, they weren't happy about this happening, but it didn't seem, according to Burton here, reporting the facts, that the people were in some kind of a riot type mood to do anything bad because their side didn't win the Georgia election. It said there are credible accounts that the breach of the Capitol just before 1 p.m. was facilitated by Antifa agents. So now this is an important thing here. There are credible accounts, Burton says, that it was facilitated by Antifa agents. If that's the case, we need to know this. There needs to be an investigation here. It says, these agents were disguised as Trump enthusiasts. And I have no doubt that Antifa was leading the breach, said freelance correspondent Michael Yon in an Epoch Time interview. Yon cited telltale signs of the presence of Antifa cells. This was the use of helmets, goggles, backpacks, and changes of clothing. So according to Yon, and according to Burton here, that it's people that were carrying changes of clothes, that they were carrying helmets or had helmets on or had helmets with them, and that they had backpacks and changes of clothing. This is a motif that occurred in a lot of the other riots throughout the country where Antifa was definitely involved. And so Jan is saying that these are signs that there were Antifa agents involved in this. It goes on here. It says, These people were saying, come forward, keep coming, go over the wall. Mainstream coverage of the events depicted an invasion of surly men exiting the Capitol. We're taking back our country, baby. Next time we come, we'll be armed. Let's go get a beer, shouted one 40-something bearded man. In a video posted by Matt Miller of the Post Millennial, these men pushed past a gold door with "Murder the Media" scrawled on it. If the men were Trump supporters, then agents provocateurs had plenty of material to work with. So again, were these people Trump supporters, or were these people simply people disguised as Trump supporters to try and get something out of this on one side or the other? It seems that these people were out of place. Most of the people, according to the earlier report here, was that people were friendly. They were bumping shoulders and so forth. They weren't doing anything bad. And yet these people with helmets and with changes of clothes and with backpacks and so forth were doing these kinds of things. So it seems to me there is room to suspect that these people were not Trump supporters, and we should investigate that to find out what the truth is.
That's true. And you take into consideration that many people said that they saw these trucks putting supplies on certain corners, and that's what the Antifa did before
They did that
out in the northwest.
Yes, they did. So I mean, there's more evidence
that supplies were there. It was pre-planned.
So the thing is it needs to be investigated. Among those who breached the chamber of the Senate, none stood out more than bare-chested 30-year-old QAnon shaman Jacob Chansley, also known as Jake Angeli. His face painted red, white, and blue, and his head crowned with cow horns in the manner of a Visigoth barbarian standing on the Capitol steps in Rome. And we're going to have to stop here and take a break, and we'll come back to this and talk a little bit more about him. And this man has been arrested, and I believe is still in jail, and find out, you know, exactly what is it that he do. And he was standing there in the Senate on Pence's chair, or, you know, beside Pence's chair, and shouting, "Where's Pence?" So we'll come back to this. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. Catholic Spirit Radio reaches a milestone on March 9th this year. This year, we celebrate the 10th anniversary of our founding. It was the culmination of a four-year effort. In the beginning, we had an old transmitter. There were no listeners, no sponsors, and no budget. Today, we have four new transmitters and a modern production studio facility in Normal and are heard across central Illinois. These changes have been made possible by generous donors such as you. Won't you celebrate the 10th anniversary of our founding with us? Between now and March 9th, we ask listeners to send a birthday or anniversary card to Catholic Spirit Radio at 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. If you include a $100 tax-deductible gift or more, along with your contact information, a complimentary coffee cup featuring Mother Angelica's image will be awaiting your pickup. Please help Catholic Spirit Radio today to continue its work of sharing the good news of Jesus Christ through your most generous support.
Hi, this is Bob Johnson. We're back from our break. We're talking about what really happened January 6th at the Save America rally in Washington, and seeing, you know, what exactly it was that happened there. The reporter is Douglas Burton, an independent writer living near Washington, D.C., a former editor for the Washington Times publication, and a volunteer, former volunteer in Donald Trump's reelection campaign. And he was there, and he's reporting what he saw. And he's talking here about this Chansley, who was a person dressed up like a Viking inside of the Senate chamber, standing next to Pence's chair. And he was shouting, "Where's Pence?" And he has been arrested. He's still in jail. And so, you know, what exactly was he doing? Chansley was joined by plenty of QAnon followers, including Ashley Babbitt. And when we're talking about QAnon here, you know, there's this charge, I think, by the left that QAnon is some kind of a right-wing organization that is it's sort of a militant organization that is trying to attack and undermine our government and our institutions. If that's the case, there's no evidence, who they are or what they are. The more I read and understand about them, it seems as if there's some kind of an invention of the right, something similar out of George Orwell's 1984, if you've ever read that novel of Goldstein and his men who were in the 1984 novel always blamed for anything that went wrong what the government was doing. At any rate, this Burton goes on, he says, I spoke to a Trump campaigner in his 60s from Florida named David, who came early to the Ellipse and stayed close to the Capitol until 6 p.m. And he said, in prayer, God told me that January 6th was crucial, David told me. I think the election was totally stolen. He added, I felt like we had to show the congressmen and senators that they were not above the law, that the fraud had to be set straight. And I don't believe this problem will be settled legally or politically. The military will have to come in, call for a revote, and restore order. So, I mean, here's a guy, it seems like he's very, very naive. And somehow or another, all of this came to him in prayer. I'm not saying that, this is not to be taken seriously. But the point is a lot of these people had expectations that simply were, out of line with what was really going to happen. They certainly don't sound like some kind of conspirators to attack and destroy the government. David denied being a Q follower, whatever that is, and we still don't really know for sure, but he appeared to hold similar views. He was one of the 99.5% of the participants at the event who did not enter the Capitol. And this is something that's not being, told. What was the percentage that were actually doing the so-called rioting? He says, I spoke also to a retired civil servant and Trump supporter, Tricia, who said she spent a half hour in the Capitol taking photographs and praying for a miracle. Police just let us in, she told me. We walked into the Capitol from the northwest side about 2:30 p.m. through a breached window or a door and walked through the rotunda to the western side, where she said she was ushered out about 30 minutes later. So she is saying the police just let them in. And if this is the case, why was it the case? It needs to be investigated. Photos and video on Trisha's cell phone show Capitol Police standing silently along hallways in sentry positions. In one short video, a Trump demonstrator tells his colleagues not to litter. Show respect. These people have allowed us to be in here, so don't leave any trash on the floor. This hardly sounds like, some kind of a underhanded person attacking the government.
Sounds like Tea Party. Clean up.
Yeah, it does. Trisha's voice is heard telling a black uniformed policeman, please forgive us. God bless you for what you are doing here. Thank you for your service. Again, this hardly sounds like some kind of a person who is engaged in a conspiracy or engaged in some kind of insurrection against the government. As Trisha exited from a portal on the west side of the building, she kept her video cam on even as she reached the marble steps, which were spattered with Ashley Babbitt's blood. Now, Ashley Babbitt, this 14-year-old Air Force veteran, was shot for entering, trying to enter the Senate chamber, I guess. The efforts of the Capitol intruders to make their point without desecrating a federal building is part of the story viewers haven't seen yet on Fox News. In other words, Fox should be able to be reporting these things. They're supposed to be reporting on the conservative side. So these people are on the conservative side that went into the Capitol. And so they should be reporting, on all of what's going on that side. And yet they omitted this. And he says, Fox's news narrative follows closely the media pack line that the breach was an abomination for which conservatives can never atone. It's this betrayal of its own audience that, in my view, will cause Fox News to continue its downward spiral to the bottom of cable news rankings. And that may be the case, because it seems if is the left, Congress people and everyone else, when they're doing their rioting and so forth, they go out of their way to try and explain away or defend it, calling their riots when buildings are burning down mostly peaceful, And yet the left treats this particular conflagration that happened here as if it was some kind of a war going on, which, of course, it wasn't anywhere nearly as bad as what we've seen for all summer long that's been going on out, you know, in Milwaukee and Portland and other places throughout the country. At any rate, the article goes on. It says, despite the shocking events of the day, there are signs that a figurative resurrection may follow the MAGA movement's mortification. And maybe this is what he's talking about when he said earlier that there's, you know, some kind of reason for hope. It says, in the face of the massive overreach of the Pelosi gang in seeking to punish anyone who stood against the election fraud and the glaringly obvious censorship by the tech oligarchs, American Trump supporters aren't backing down. And let's face it. There was fraud going on in the election. I think everyone knows that. The question is was there enough of it to cause a change in the outcome of the election? And that is a point that needs to be investigated and further debated. But the point is that there certainly was. And it is true, as political commentator Matt Walsh has observed, that the left owns the media narrative, if only because they own the media platforms. And they do. I mean, we have the companies who are doing a lot of their own censoring. They have a lot of power. And it goes on here. It says, yet a January 11th Rasmussen poll reported that 48% of Americans still approved of Trump despite the Capitol riots. So we're getting this huge reporting that somehow or another these Capitol riots were way worse than they really are, and that they're an abomination that all Americans disparage. How can that be? If 48% of the Americans in that poll still were on the side of the conservative Donald Trump. A lot of people are not seeing what happened in Washington, D.C. in the same way that the news media is reporting it. And this author here is saying that the news media on both sides, the conservative side as well as the liberal side, are reporting this as if it's something worse than it really was. And we need an investigation to tell us what's the real truth going on here. It says, even the leftist pollster Nate Silver tweeted on January 15th that Trump's approval rating was at 38.1%, which is still higher than some would have expected, given the chorus of condemnation dominating the nation's airwaves. So there's a big disparity between what people actually believe about what happened and what we're being told. And we need to find out what the truth is. Goes on, despite the craven performance of Fox News reporters, and you can see Doug here is taking, you know, a conservative stand. He's saying the channel's leading personality, Tucker Carlson, has been asking the right question. And that question is, why do they, that is, the left, and even a lot of the so-called right-wing media, why do they hate Trump so much? And a lot of them do. The mainstream media has been obsessed with Donald J. Trump since the day he came down the gold escalator in 2015. The hatred goes beyond the man's style. It goes beyond his mean words and his policies. CNN's Anderson Cooper provided a clue when on the evening of January 6th, he sarcastically suggested that the rally-goers would return that night to their Marriott hotels and their Olive Garden restaurants, the implication being that only low-class deplorables would dine at the Olive Garden. And so, again, this is being framed here as a class situation, and it seems that that is truly the case. Hillary Clinton called all these citizens and so forth a basket of deplorables. And it seems as if in the so-called conservative side itself, there are a lot of people who hold these people somehow or another not fitting to be in this conservative movement. And I talked about on one of my shows here a while back that it doesn't seem that the conservative party, the Republican Party, doesn't seem to understand who their constituents are anymore under Donald Trump. Or if they do understand, they don't seem to want them as their constituents. And yet these people represent a lot of us ordinary working class Americans. And so there is a huge turmoil going on in our civilization that needs to be understood, and we're not getting the reporting, the factual reporting that we need. It goes on. In short, they hate Trump because of what he represents, the despised middle class, many of them white, but including all ethnicities. And we need to understand that Trump did get more black and Spanish votes, Latino votes, I shouldn't say Spanish, but Latino votes, than any other candidate prior, you know, especially any other Republican candidate prior to him. So the question is, why do these people on the left and many on the right also hate us? And this was a question widely raised after 9/11 to explore the motivation of religious extremists in the Middle East. And today we're asking the same question of the billionaire tech oligarchs, the woke media, and the socialist leadership on Capitol Hill. Why do they hate these people who were out protesting the Save America rally in Washington, D.C.? And what is the reason for this? And it seems as if it is because America has changed and we're being more or less ruled by a managerial class that looks down upon the ordinary working class in a different way than it ever used to. It goes on, it says, the MAGA masses that came to Washington on January 6th failed to see what was coming that day, is what Burton's conclusion is. That most of these people went there not expecting anything like this to happen, and we need to investigate to find out what exactly did happen and why it did. But at any rate, the article concludes by saying, now they, meaning these masses who were supporting Trump, they should more fully grasp why and how deeply they are hated by the country's elites. And so he's putting his finger on something that's going on here, and the article isn't conclusive, but it needs, it's saying that we need, in effect, to do much more investigation, and people need to rethink the whole situation of what's going on. It seems as if we have a whole group of people that used to be in their youth doing the same kinds of things that the masses were out doing here. In other words, the establishment today is made up of the leftist radicals of yesterday, and yet they seem to have turned on the working class in which they supposedly came to power claiming to support. And the people who are supporting to be those, the so-called conservatives of the day, are split and unsure of, and many of them are siding, in effect, with the left in disliking these people and looking upon them as some kind of traitors to the country. And this whole incident is being reported in such a way that we're not really getting the information as to what actually happened there and what's really going on. And that is something that we desperately need in this country. And since this is, you know, something that's severely affecting Western civilization, and the Catholic Church laid the foundation for Western civilization, it should be extremely important to Catholics and the Catholic Church as to what's really going on in these situations. And we need more pushback against these simply opinionated charges on one side or the other to demand that we have a factual investigation and find out what the truth is at the bottom of all of this. So that's mainly the conclusion I think that this article makes us arrive at. And I think it's a good conclusion. And I think there needs to be far more investigation into this and far more pushback on a lot of these things by the people of this country and the church itself. What do you think, Lynn?
Indeed it does. I mean, this can... finding out what really happened can affect our future and our children's future and the future of this government. We need to know the truth.
Exactly. And if you look at this whole thing, it doesn't seem to me, if you look at all the pieces of what happened here, that there was any kind of insurrection or any kind of plan to, you know, attack or destroy the government or attack or destroy people in Congress. There's no evidence of anybody even breaking into the rotunda with guns or trying to injure or kill anyone or any evidence along those lines. The only person that died in this from gunshots was one of the protesters themselves, that lady who was a former Air Force person. And that was at the hands of the police, and she herself wasn't armed. There needs to be more investigation into that. And
And into the fact that at first we saw pictures of these people were touring more or less the whole Congress. You know, they were going through the Hall of Statues and everything, and they were all calm and looking in awe at the things. And all of a sudden, some faction of this group got a little wild.
That's true. And the fact is that there does seem to be a huge class breach going on here in this country, and that needs to be investigated more as well. So at any rate, I hope this has shed a little bit of light on what happened there and makes people understand that there is a strong need for a factual, neutral investigation that tells us what actually happened there and information that we need to know. And you know, that is something that we should be pushing for. Everyone should, all Americans should want to know, what is it that really happened at Washington, D.C.? This is a start from someone who is there, and we need a lot more of it. So with that, we're going to stop. I hope you this was informative, and more people will look into this. So, St. Michael the Archangel,
defend us in battle.
Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust in hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.